I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the ring.
We are all kings of the rings. Welcome to the Japan Wood Podcast, episode 141. And I am your host, Matthew PMBigelow.com. This is, of course, the podcast coming at you from the Tomihisacho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan. The armpit of Asia. Covering AI markets, rising conflict in the Indo-Pacific, the economy, and more. We welcome you to the podcast. And, of course, we always like to begin with a little something. And I don't do this, but imagine doing this. There are people who plot. There are plotters. And I'm not talking about them, when we say, you know what they want. Yes. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about people in your midst, in my midst, in all of our midst. And they plot. They go to bed plotting, and they wake up plotting. And they interact with you, and they're plotting. And it could be easy to get roped into their plots. You might even be targeted by a plotter, and you might not even know it. Generally speaking, if somebody comes to you with a proposal, like for, hey, why don't we start a tennis club? You're like, what? No, I don't play tennis. That's fine. Thank you. That person is maybe plotting, but probably not. But if the person is like in your team at work and they start kind of targeting you or flattering you and then bit by bit trying to incorporate their ideas into you or incorporate your ideas into them, and then they get a promotion or something, and then you never see them again. Those are the plotters I'm talking about. I don't wake up with hate in my heart. Sometimes I walk around and, for example, I was walking with my son down on a shopping arcade street in Tokyo, very long one in Asagaya. And my son was walking along and an old lady just bashed him in the head with a bag. Like, was it by accident or was she just not getting out of the way? And I reached back and I kind of tapped her on the shoulder and she looked at me. She said, "Oi, itai yo." And I'm like, well, that's not going to hurt. And I just looked at her and I said, "Oi, musuko no tama ni kaba no butsuketa yo." I don't know if that's correct Japanese or not, but she got the message. I hated her and I still hate her, that old bag. But she probably, I don't wake up with hate in my heart. I wasn't looking for her, you know, it kind of popped out of the blue. But there are people that just walk around plotting. They walk around with hate in their hearts. And it could be your very best friend who's looking at you and you think you're on the same page, but really they're just out to destroy you. I don't know about that last part about the best friend. Although friends come and go for those very reasons. You can go into a company and make friends there, but then they kind of go, ooh, why am I friends with this guy when I could be using him? And then I could get a bonus using his ideas and get that TV for my wife. Indeed, why do I concern myself with such peons when I need to think about the home front? And then if she's distracted with the TV, I can go and get some golf clubs. So of course I'm going to use this stupid idiot's ideas. He does not deserve them. That can happen all too easily, especially in this world where we can disappear into the online communities that will support such actions. You think those suicide people that go online and find ways to commit suicide, you don't think there's similar avenues for plotters with people with hate in their hearts to also encourage each other and gain tips from each other? There's got to be plotterhell.com, and they all wake up with hate in their hearts, and they go out in the world, and they look at you, and they say, a decent person, I can use this fool for my plotting. Hi, how's it going? And they know how to be nice, but really, they are evil schemers, and they need to be treated by jettisoning them out of your sphere of influence. I mean, like the firewall of influencers, you know, like just get them out of your head. I don't know why I went on like that, but I kind of was wondering some people in the past, you know, that you work with, and then they weren't just being nice. They were like using me, not specifically me, but using others as a way to promote themselves through the ranks by being really falsely sincere about their intentions. And just think about that now. They're all over the place. They're surrounding you. If you're listening on a bus, there's probably at least two or three plotters on the bus right now. Maybe even the bus driver himself or herself or yourself. Let's begin with Japan. What? WTF? What's going on in Japan? Is it crazy or is it just Japan? But more so,
is it? Oh, is it?
Because we're going to focus a little bit on supply chain and war today, I have three items. I'm going to choose the most pertinent one, even though the other one is kind of funny. Want to spruce up your bike helmet? Tokyo to create missile shelter in Azabujuban subway station. If you've ever been to Azabujuban, it's considered to be one of the poshest areas of Tokyo. It can be, but also it has like the, it's kind of like the posh, the wood, the shine is coming off the wood in many aspects of Azabujuban. There's a lot of nice restaurants, a lot of nice culture, a lot of nice little shops and stuff like that. But the idea that it's like, oh, Azabujuban, this, it's kind of a relic of the past and it still keeps its legacy title. But in a way, we're not really thinking about Azabujuban as, I don't know, the end all and be all of Tokyo high end shenanigans these days. But anyways, Tokyo to create missile shelter in Azabujuban subway station. The Asahi Shimbun, Asia and Japan Watch, published on March 18th, 2024, and we are recording this on March 19th, 2024. I'll be posting a photograph of the evacuation drill onto the website for the podcast, where you can go to get links, ideas, and more, MatthewPMBigelow.com. The Tokyo Metropolitan Government plans to renovate Azabujuban subway station in the city's Minato Ward to create a migration, an underground shelter in case of missile attacks, sources said. Azabujuban, a stop on the capital's Toei Oedo line, is a stone's throw from the Roppongi and Hiro districts, where many foreign embassies are located. The metropolitan government is expected to include 200 million yen, or $1.3 million. How the yen has fallen. It is draft budget for the new fiscal year. Sources in the metropolitan government said plans for the underground storage area for emergency supplies in the station premises can be refurbished so Tokyoites have somewhere to safe to huddle in the event of a prolonged attack. I'm not sure if I'm going to be hiding in the subways. Or maybe I will. I've always wanted to be a tunnel person. You know how society falls back into the tunnels? Or when push comes to shove, some of us just dig. I've always wanted to be one of those diggers. That's one letter away from a bad word, isn't it? A survey will soon start to ascertain details and specifications of the shelter. And Tokyo has already designated 4,258 sites as of last November, and some of them are operated by private enterprises. Well, this could be as we're preparing for war. I'm not even sure if war is going to expand or it's going to happen, but it certainly is like a lot on the periphery these days. And Taiwan as well with China, and 2027 is this big date that's upcoming, and I did a lot of research into it for today's podcast. I figured, well, if you only have 3.5 years away till 2027, or even 3 years away till 2027, that's probably what it takes to redo a subway station and make it appropriate for a sheltering hub in case World War III truly kicks off in earnest in the Pacific at that time. You'd never know. All right, so is it for war or is it just to spend money?
Is it? Oh, is it?
All right, let's take a look at some business before we get on to some of the meatier parts of the article. This is pertinent stuff that needs to be mentioned. Play it.
Here we go.
Go. coming to us from NHK, just as a synopsis. NHK English is good at synopses, even though I don't really, you're not going to get anything that, you know, goes against any narrative that the government, it's a government outlet. So it's like, okay. But anyways, BOJ discusses an end to negative interest rates. Bank of Japan policymakers kicked off their two-day meeting on Monday to discuss monetary measures, including ending the era of negative interest rates. Always a policy that none of us really liked. It was done to get Japanese people and their savings into the stock markets. But then a lot of Japanese people who had never invested into the stock much before in their lives lost a lot of money into Ponzi schemes and scammers and things like that. Like, ooh, it's the next AI wonder blockchain. Invest now. And then poof, the money's all gone. Among others, there's always scams that you know and then you don't know about. But the idea of negative interest rates, not very popular. Many observers say recent pay raises signal that economic conditions are being met for a shift in the BOJ's massive easing policy. And Japan's Labor Union Federation, Rengo, said last week businesses in the country agreed to an average pay hike of 5.3% in the annual spring wage negotiations. That is the biggest hike in 33 years. Oh, really? It's just coincidentally. They always like to find the number 33, don't they? I don't know why they always do they. The central bank has kept a close watch over wage talks. It sees a virtuous cycle of pay and price increases as a precondition for adjusting its ultra-easy monetary policy. This virtual cycle is also the Kishida's, Prime Minister Kishida's, whose approval rate is like at 18%. It's like the lowest ever. It's just part of new capitalism. But the new capitalism is just another way of saying stakeholder capitalism. It's a way of inviting a bunch of minority parties into your stock markets and giving them a say about where the economy should go. And we've seen a massive influx of buying up of Japanese company stocks in the past year and a half. So that could be also playing into it. The Bank of Japan is always so shady and cagey with their rationales. Like, we will even pay more closer attention to the possible increases if they happen. It's like, okay, what is it? Okay. Government Uedo Kazuo told lawmakers last week that the BOJ will consider revising the negative rate policy. On Monday, the board members are believed to have exchanged opinions, blah, blah, blah. I'm just giving this right now because if the BOJ decides to shift their fiscal policy, what I'm hoping for is that it will see a appreciation of the yen. And I've noticed that some prices on foreign products are already coming down. Some things that used to cost like 60,000 yen or 4 or 5 years ago would be $600 rose up to import them to 90,000 yen. And for me, that's like a massive increase, but because the yen depreciated so much, the dollar value was the same. So it's like if you were looking at importing things for your house or your collection or your hobby or whatever, it made total sense for a while, then it didn't make any sense at all. And I'm hoping that we see an appreciation of the yen. So I just thought that would be something to say with that. And then another thing that I've noticed that I'm actually hoping for is more domestic production of mass consumable products in Japan. The idea that we can, when things were stable and much more stable, or when it was considered, when it wasn't so vulnerable, when a lot of the companies started taking their factories in Japan and putting them into Vietnam and Thailand and China and things like that, it was kind of seen as like, well, an investment opportunity, or because things are stable and the supply chain routes are stable, we have this possibility to now diversify and kind of lose some domestic jobs. Not very good, but the offset would be if you're producing a lot of mass consumable goods for the world and you have production plants in multiple countries, you're less a victim to price shocks and increases and decreases. So if one currency plummets, well, you still have all these places all over these other countries and they're not going through the same economic hardship. So it kind of creates like a reason for stability by decentralizing your supply chain network. But after Wuhan and the COVID crisis and the chip crisis and the just-in-time delivery fiasco that's been going on for the past 4 or 5 years, sourcing everything and then people shutting down economies randomly, it became a vulnerability. And so I'm also hoping that, because for me, in my hobby of like audio gear and stuff like that, it's not as common to find domestic produced top end or consumer end audio gear. You can, but you're obviously going to be looking at a variety of companies from America or Europe and things like that, and less so from Japan. Hopefully this move is a good one. And this is coming back again to the Asahi Shimbun. Pushed into corner, Yamaha set to return to domestic production. This is from Hamamatsu from Shizuoka Prefecture. Citing the weak yen and dwindling sales, musical instrument giant Yamaha Corp said it's scaling back its investment in China to focus on domestic production, a sharp reversal in strategy. Ah, nice joke there. Maybe you don't get it because you're not a musician, but there's flat notes and sharp notes. The company had invested heavily in overseas plants on grounds of cost and efficiency. As a first step, it will integrate Yamaha Music Manufacturing Japan Corp, a subsidiary based in Iwata, Shizuoka Prefecture, that manages its domestic plants, into its headquarters in April. Doing so will allow it to serve as a production base for the world as a whole. The move, officials said, is aimed at enhancing interactions between product development and frontline production activities. They said it will also strengthen its function as the main plant that provides technical guidance to overseas factories. Domestic capital investment. Quote, "We want to raise the level of our plants," President Takuya Nakata told reporters. The company has been planning to increase production of key piano components in China to meet demand, but that will now be undertaken by its plant in Iwata. Yamaha had pursued a strategy of selection and concentration at home and abroad with an eye of bringing domestic production to a halt at some point. The latest corporate decision constitutes a major change in policy. Semiconductor procurement. Yamaha makes relatively high-end products at its plant in Japan for export. Aside from China, it also operates manufacturing plants in Indonesia and elsewhere. Piano sales have plunged in China after years of rapid growth due to the country's economic slowdown. In addition, labor costs and other expenses have risen. Benefiting from a weak yen, Yamaha is pinning its hopes on being able to sell musical instruments in a flexible manner. And blah, blah, blah. I just thought that was good. Maybe that the yen is so low now, it might encourage reshoring of industries. And I would also like to see, just with more domestic production in Japan as a whole. And that, I'm going to leave it there. If they could do that, we're going to see a major resurgence in a Japanese local economy. It might not be as explosive or as elaborate as before 2015, but it could be more, quote unquote, I don't like the word, sustainable or responsible in the long term, to have things made and produced and then bought and sold domestically, more so than what has been going on in the past 10, 15 years. So that's the economy for today.
Here we go.
Let's take a look at Japan Society 5.0.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. The Industrial Revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example...
All right, that's the Japanese government's promotional video for Japan Society 5.0, meaning the next society that we're building, AI, wireless communications, society. And Society 5.0 is just a buildup of the previous versions of the society. Like 1.0 is hunter-gatherer, and so on. You get the idea. Now, when I first started researching this in AI, there wasn't much in the way of news. There was always some news, but now there's like it's a lot of news. And most of it's like fear porn. It's nothing much to do with AI at all, but it's like AI is going to destroy, or, oh, these deep fakes need to be controlled. Oh, the European Commission believes that we need more guardrails on AI because people are making cartoons. Oh, no. What kind of totalitarian madness is this world? But as the industry cycles through society, it becomes not just in the hands of like commentators or futurists or like the people at Davos or the European Commission. It circulates into society that in ways that we would never even imagine. And this is a very strange article. And of course, when I was kind of working as a teacher and researcher of AI for a telecommunications company in Japan for 5 years, I did that like 40 hours a day for 5 years straight to teach engineers English with the background of IoT, AI, and markets and international marketplaces and what technologies are being used and all that. From an engineer's perspective, it's kind of how I was approaching it. I always knew that AI was going to be it was at the engineering stage, it was at the development stage, but the power of it and just the ease in which that it could do things, I was like, well, this is going to be huge. I was more worried that we were going to go into like a Chinese style social credit system with AI cameras everywhere and QR codes that monitor and make us like go to places or stay away in places based on our activity. That's why I was against a lot of the COVID-19 measures, because I just viewed it as a Chinese social credit system measure. And it really was like, did we become more like China in the coronavirus pandemic or so-called pandemic, or did we become less like China? We all became more like China, unfortunately, despite my protest. But I never would have imagined like the normie, AI for normies. And this is how we are getting into AI for normies now. This comes to us from yahoo.co.jp, and it's translated using the Chrome function here. And I translated it into ChatGPT as well, and it was basically the same, but it's pretty funky. And so we're going to use the Chrome hallucinations from its own AI translation service as a way to kind of signal that we are in an AI world now, because the normies are using it. 30 years ago, computers were for nerds. Now they're for hot chicks to show their ass on Instagram. Artificial intelligence generates sentences from messages received. Yu Kashi reads out an unstoppable, quote, love AI novel, end quote. That's the headline. On March 12th, actress Yu Kashi, who's 37 years old, participated in the project presentation commemorating the release of Love AI Novel and Lipton Milk Tea 40th Anniversary, held at Morinaga Plaza Building in Tokyo, which will be closed this month. She read aloud the Love AI Novel, a love novel written by AI. Lipton Milk Tea was discontinued 2 years ago, but it was relaunched last year in response to customer feedback from fans who wanted it back. The Love AI novel was created by AI using approximately 65,000 characters of messages sent by customers. Kashi was surprised by her performance and couldn't stop squirting. That's what gushing, I think, would be the... but anyways, squirting. She has been drinking Lipton milk tea for many years and said with a grin, "It's like my buddy. I often buy it on the way to work, drink it while I'm doing makeup, and use it to refresh myself before I start shooting," she says, adding, "Now that my children are older, I've been able to make time for myself, and I like to go for walks. I can go and move my body. I move my body, and I buy it at a convenience store as a reward for doing a good job." That's the article. What? That's AI for normies in the entertainment section. I'm not sure how the integration is going, but That is Lipton tying up with an actress to promote its tea for a book launch about a love novel written by AI. That is nuts. Now, that is Japan Society 5.0. That, like, we don't have the drone delivery. We don't have the medical delivery. We don't have the self-driving cars. We don't have robot delivery. We're getting a little bit. We don't have all of those things. But we do have large language models. I was thinking earlier, and I kind of redid it, but I said we're kind of text people when it comes to a lot of this stuff. And in a way, it's true. Like, the internet delivery systems are all based on code, and we're interacting with our phones, which is based on code. So to kind of use AI in the code, it's disseminated everywhere, and it doesn't interfere with pre-existing chains of infrastructure. Like the self-driving robots, what makes them drive is code. But they also have to operate around humans and tamperers and things like that. But it's hard to tamper with a wireless algorithm shooting into your phone from God knows where. So in a way, the dissemination of AI through large language models or through AI-generated news and all of these things kind of makes it proliferate a lot more easily because it doesn't have to. It's separated already into its own delivery mechanisms, just like water is delivered through the piping systems and so on and so forth. It's almost like the wireless infrastructure is designed to deliver AI models based on text. And when it's to our phones or to our AI love books and things like that, it advances at a much faster rate because it can reiterate and we don't have to worry about, you know, people bashing the AI wireless algorithm in the face like a robot does when it's out for delivery and things like that. So kind of an interesting idea there. And that's why we have this idea of Lipton Iced Tea teaming up with a model to promote AI love storybooks as opposed to us in a park ordering via our phone whiskey highballs and fried chicken from a robot that delivers it right to us in the park because that's too dangerous. We have the boiling oil instead of a wireless algorithm. You get it? I think you do. Next one. We're going to take a look at some more advanced reasoning behind the AI infrastructure for today. And it's the other aspect of ways to disseminate AI infrastructure throughout society is through cameras because they also have their own CCTV networks or they also don't need to compete against humans for the same space. So for things like facial recognition, camera analytics, crowd management systems and things like that, it begins to make a lot more sense to use cameras integrated into reality. So that's what we're going to take a look at today. And this first one is from the Nikkei English, Japanese one translated into English. And it says, Ishikawa Kaga City completes admission to hospitals using the My Number card and facial recognition. My Number card is a giant fiasco. It's basically a personal citizen ID card, and it's meant to be used for digital purposes, but it only is really used for doing more paperwork. On the 18th, March, Kaga City, Ishikawa Prefecture began an initiative that utilizes public personal authentication using My Number cards and a facial recognition system. When citizens receive medical care or other services, they can register their facial information using the smartphone app of the biometric authentication service Liquid and receive a face pass, which aims to improve convenience for citizens and streamline operations. Checking into a hospital is sometimes a pain in the ass, but just walking up and showing your face might be a way to do it. The targets are Kaga City Medical Center, a public hospital, Kaga Niko Niko Park, and disaster evacuation centers. Registration for the app can be done by family, so even children and elderly people who don't have smartphones can use the service if they have their family members register in advance. Not a bad way to do it, actually. To remove the guardrails, I was like, hey, here's my dad. He's coming in. Boop. Okay. Take a picture and send it off. He doesn't have a smartphone. Luckily. In September 2023, Kaga City launched the Kaga City Smart Pass initiative, which links facial recognition and My Number cards to allow people to use various services within the city without bringing their own wallets. In the future, the idea is to link payment information to improve the convenience of shopping. I'm not sure. So it's going to go into a paid article behind that. I'm not going to read it much, but we could kind of begin to see integration of cameras now into applications. What I like about it is that my main thing is with China, it's AI recognition everywhere, and the police have all the information, and they can post your information wherever they want, and people can scan your information and find out where you live and find out your social credit score. And then if they go too close to you, they might have a setting on their phone that alarms them that they're near people who, with low credit scores, and they will avoid going near you to avoid their social credit scores from going down. So it's like this ubiquitous, always changing, shifting rules. And if you donate blood, you get some credits. And if you go and visit your parents, it shows that you're not at home playing video games, so you don't get docked. All of these things are being done in China. What I like about this hospital thing is that it has a set beginning and a set ending. If you can register your information at home, tie it to your face, you go to the hospital. Now you don't have to wait in line at the hospital to do all the registration there. So now there's not just like this giant line of people waiting to get their papers so that they can put their information on it when it could have been done at home. And then you leave the hospital and you leave the facial recognition system behind at the hospital. It doesn't follow you around like a paranoid vision like that schizophrenics have, you know, like, all the cameras are after me. Well, they are now. So how schizophrenic is that? How do you convince a schizophrenic that it's not happening when it is happening? Well, it's by having the limited reach of the AI panopticon. So you go into the hospital, it's there. You leave the hospital, it's a different system, or it's not there. That to me is the way forward for this technology. And I said it many times. The next one is also with the My Number card. And it's nice to see that the My Number card is getting some digital application. I guess that when you go to the hospital, you would scan your face and then maybe enter in your My Number card or scan your My Number card as well, so that you would have a two-factor authentication. And then the hospital has both items on record, your card and your face. But then we have now the possibility for all that to be leaked now, don't we? So if you don't have your own private, secure hospital protection network, other hackers from other countries will now be able to access it and then gain very valuable medical data that could be sold to other AI medical companies looking to make drugs based on predictive analytics, what the people are going to the hospital, what they have, what medicines they're getting, etc., and then decide what type of investments into medical fields they should be making at that time. So the idea of just having all of your medical information stored on a server in a hospital somewhere by an aging society that doesn't understand Chinese hackers or North Korean hackers, that's Japan, they're very naive about those things here, that proposes a massive security threat, not going to lie. A campaign event was held at a large commercial facility in Hiroshima City to encourage people to make more use of their My Number cards or insurance cards through facial recognition. The digital agency is holding these events one after another across the country. In particular, efforts are being made to promote the use of facial recognition as insurance cards. To use it, first place the card under the reader and show your face to the lens attached to the monitor to confirm your identity. At the venue, shoppers or people with their families could enjoy the experience. Those who experienced it said, quote, "I think it's easy to use because the operation itself is relatively easy to remember after doing it once." And then the government plans to abolish health insurance cards and shift to a system based on minor health insurance cards and so on. So again, there might be some translation hallucinations going on there as well. But as we can see, using your face for medical applications is kind of an expanding idea in some areas in Japan. And I cover this segment a lot on the Japan What podcast. It's a little bit of the forte of the podcast. I don't see any other people gathering this data. And a lot of these sites are from Japanese and I translate them into English. We're seeing also in Kyushu, which I've covered before, quite an uptick in facial recognition for commercial payments and things like that. So it's beginning to expand, but it's not expanding so much in the English reporting spheres. So you get it here. So why not go to MatthewPMBigelow.com? Check it out for more. Do we have anything else for Society 5.0 today? That's about it. I wanted to focus on a little bit something else. So that's going to be Japan Society 5.0 for today. Lipton!
The industrial revolution
Lipton iced tea!
Will create a new society.
Hey, I love novels!
Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom.
Squirting!
Society 5.0. A technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face.
Squirting!
For example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone, anytime.
Free us from the stress.
We have access to the latest medical advancements at a low cost, no matter where we are.
Of squirting.
AI and robots will...
Do you stress about squirting? Welcome to Japan Society 5.0. Before we look at the supply chain war, I wanted to take a look at a couple of insane things coming out of China. The way I view a lot of this stuff is that when we see developments coming out of one country, it might start affecting us in another country. And especially with the supply chains that being what they are, when something happens over there, it's kind of like listening to the woods. Like, is that person screaming in the woods? Is that going to affect me at a later time? Or what's that noise over there? You know, maybe we should understand it a little bit more rather than being too insular. Having a bit of a more insular supply chain might be nice, but it's also good to understand what's going on in the rest of the world. Coming to us from Zero Hedge, Chinese scientists implant first pig liver into brain-dead human. Who says nothing interesting ever happens in the world? And is this written by Sora News 24? In what could be a pioneering move, Chinese scientists have transplanted a gene-edited pig liver into a human, aiming to potentially mark a solution to organ shortages, the report says. Just get the Uyghurs. What's wrong with them? The liver was modified to reduce rejection risks and was implanted into a brain-dead recipient. If you're political and you're like, hey, was that a Democrat? Or, oh, must be a Trump supporter. Showing no rejection signs 4 days past operation, as per the Air Force Medical University. SNCP writes that this procedure could significantly aid those with end-stage liver disease, possibly revolutionizing liver transplants. Gene editing advancements in China also promise to enhance efficiency and accessibility in plant modification, reducing broader strides in medical innovation, the report continues. SMCP, that's the South China Morning Post, notes that liver diseases annually claim 2 million lives globally, with China alone witnessing up to 500,000 new cases of liver failure yearly. Xenotransplantation, the process of transplanting organs across species, could be a hopeful strategy, especially for liver ailments, given the complexity and scarcity of human livers for transplantation. While pig organs have previously been used in research, the liver's complexity means there needs to be innovative surgical approaches, such as auxiliary transplants, to ensure effective integration and function within the body. This develops signals a critical step towards more sustainable organ transplant solutions. Gotta use sustainable, addressing both the technical challenges and the dire need for viable organs. The Air Force Medical University commented, from this perspective, xenogenic liver transplantation has great clinical application value. There we go. I've even seen some ideas where they will take your DNA and snip it into a pig's DNA, and then the DNA will make the pig grow a liver that's your clone, as clone liver. Then they remove that liver from the pig, put it into you. It's your liver. Then you go and put a pig face on that evening and start going oink, 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 oink in front of the mirror. And for some reason, your wife will find it hot. Next from China. China building giant hypersonic rail gun for space launches. One thing that the West does not focus on very much is China's space ambitions and China's very advanced space program. We're always like in Japan last week, we had a space launch and it blew up pretty much right on the pad. It flew for a couple of seconds and kaboom, it blew up. This happens a lot now. And JAXA, the Japan Aeronautic Exploration Agency, routinely has these giant missions to put satellites into the atmosphere or satellites into space, and they will clean up the junk surrounding the Earth. Fail. But anyways, China building giant hypersonic railgun for space launches. What I mean to say is China has a lot of success in space and we don't really learn about it, but many Western news media will always kind of use the bellows of their operation to push and promote their allies' space ambitions and programs, even though they fail a lot, while completely ignoring the successes of China. That's what I was trying to say. In a hypersonic race for rapid-fire satellite launching supremacy, China and the U.S. are unveiling dualistic futuristic technologies that could be crucial in a war scenario where satellites are targeted. SCMP, the South China Morning Post, again, reported this month that China... This comes to us from AsiaTimes.com, by the way. Reported this month that China plans to build a giant railgun to launch its Tianjin-6 space plane, combining electromagnetic launch and hypersonic flight. China aims to use a giant electromagnetic launch track to accelerate a hypersonic aircraft to Mach 1.6, separate from the track, ignite its engine, and enter near space at 7 times the speed of sound. The Tianjin space plane is designed to carry crew and cargo into orbit and release satellites into space. It may also be designed to conduct other missions, including docking with or capturing satellites or surveillance. I'd like to see nations beginning to hack each other's satellites. Like if they send a satellite up and it releases a drone and it goes up to like an American or Japanese like monitoring satellite and hacks it, takes all that data. Now China has all that information. It goes dark in Japan and China's like, and they get all the data. That'd be awesome. SCMP says the Tianjin, it's called the Tianjin project, presents a viable application of electromagnetic launch technology to overcome challenges in high-speed flight efficiency. China Aerospace Science and Industry Corporation has constructed a 2-kilometer low vacuum track high-speed maglev test facility in Datong, Shaanxi province. The facility can propel a heavy object to speeds approaching 1,000 kilometers per hour. The length of the test line will be extended to achieve a maximum operating speed of 5,000 kilometers per hour in the coming years, the report said. At the same time, U.S.-based Stratolaunch Talon A hypersonic vehicle recently made its first powered flight carrying multiple test payloads off California's coast, the war zone, reported this month. The wedge-shaped unmanned aircraft launched from the company's massive Rockjet achieved around 200 seconds of powered flight, reaching supersonic speeds approaching Mach 5. The report notes that the Stratolaunch has since 2018 focused on hypersonic development support instead of its original focus on space launches. It mentions the company is considering introducing a fueling top-off capability to enhance its performance. And it kind of goes on from there. Very interesting stuff. So the race for electromagnetic rail guns for space launches is definitely on. And there's a maglev train in China. Is it from Shanghai to downtown Shanghai? Shanghai Airport, something like that? take a bus, it takes an hour. You take the maglev train, it takes 6 minutes, something like that. And Japan is also developing a maglev train, but it's going to be in operation in like 15 to 25 years. And there's a test facility, and you can always go to the test facility and watch this train go right past you, like 1,000, pretty fast. I'm not sure how fast it is. But what I'm saying is that they're not moving forward with it beyond the testing facility. It's very costly, right? You need superconductive materials, then they need to be cooled at a very super low temperature and maintained and all that. So, and then Japan with all of its mountains and everything, you got to create tunnels to spec and things like that. So I'm sure that it's not just putting a bunch of tracks on the ground with a bunch of magnets on it and watching it go zoom. We'd be doing that if we could, but it seems that China has the finances now and the space and the technicians to make it so. A lot of people say, oh, China's population is imploding. Well, you have 1.4 billion people and you can probably find a few million engineers with the know-how to collaborate with each other on these types of insane projects. So that's going to be China for today. Let's move on to the supply chain war.
Die for the war, everybody moves. Die for the good, die for the war, die for the war.
All right. Some weird audio issues with that jingle. I'm never sure why that is. Weird frog in my throat today. I don't understand why. Supply chain war. We're going to continue along with a little bit of China in this case, but it's for the global supply chains. I believe that we are in a supply chain war. China has long had its Belt and Road Initiative, or its One Belt, One Road policy, aiming to connect China's economy to the economy of Central China, Central Asia, into Europe even, but especially down through the Middle East and then into Africa, using maritime routes, road routes, rail routes, and airline routes as well, I would imagine. But a lot of it is coming from rail, road, and marine. And when we look at the situation ever since COVID-19 was released, China shut down Wuhan, and Wuhan was a manufacturing hub for the world. The consequences of that led to chip shortages, massive amounts of disruptions in the supply chain wars, and China has massive amounts of shipping containers as well, and shipping ports and shipping companies, and they were able to leverage that to affect the G7's shipping routes. That's very well documented. And so we had all these things that could just not be delivered into the G7 countries, while China's shipping was just fine and dandy. They would hold up container ships and just hold them there in China for very long periods of time. And okay, what are you going to do about it, West? Nothing, because you're too afraid of the sniffles. And remember, adversaries will exploit your weakness. And then when we had the recent sanctions against Russia come in, Russia tied up with China even more and bolstered their energy supply chain networks and kicked a lot of people out as well. And with the recent Hamas-Israel war, we have the Iranians backing the Muslim side. We have the G7 essentially backing the Israeli side. And we also have the Houthis in Yemen with drones and missiles and rockets creating like a naval blockade targeting G7 shipping routes, which then increases the cost of insuring goods and lowers the efficiency rates of transporting those goods. And a lot of ships now are not going to go through the Suez Canal unless you're a Chinese ship or an Iranian ship. Those would probably be fine. And as a result, we see a bolstering of China's or BRICS-style supply chains, and we're in a supply chain war. Japan is very much on the side of the Americans, and when we look at China's One Belt, One Road maps or Belt and Road Initiative maps, Japan's not part of it, and China's very aggressive moves in the South China Sea right now are, in my opinion, ways for China to claim not only the resources there, but the supply chain routes as well. So they're aiming to push out other minor countries to gain access to the value that they see in the future of connecting their Huawei networks, their social credit scores, their digital renminbi, their CB digital bank, central digital bank currency through their supply chain networks to the rest of the world and trying to push out the American model as a competitor. And that's basically what's kind of going on here. So Japan also suffers very much in these cases. And we're not just going to take a look here as kind of an extra example of that. This comes to us from Xinhua, Englishnews.cn. Xinhua is a government mouthpiece, so take it. It's like reading NHK, essentially. China-Europe rail route stabilizes global supply chains amid turmoil. I'm not going to go too much into it, but for the supply chain wars, it bolsters their supply chain networks and their control over the global economy. The China-Europe Freight Train Service, a flagship program of the Belt and Road Initiative, is experiencing a surge in demand amidst the turmoil caused by the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The China-Europe Freight Train Service is highlighting its critical role as dependable and a trade route that contributes to the resilience of global supply chains. So this is all propaganda, but we're in war. This is published on March 9th. It's a little bit old, but the Japan Web Podcast is not a breaking news podcast. We're looking at trends from the recent past to the present and how that might affect our future. Highlighting its critical role as a dependable trade route that contributes to the resilience of global supply chains. The growing popularity of the freight train service stems from its safety, reliability, and resilience against external disruptions. Unlike maritime routes, which are susceptible to piracy, adverse weather conditions, and geopolitical tensions, the land-based China-Europe freight train channel offers a faster, more secure, and stable alternative. This is, of course, a promo for their own services. The China-Europe freight train service is highly cost-effective. In reaction to Red Sea piracy and conflict, many shipping corporations are having to redirect their routes through South Africa's Cape of Good Hope. This move, which adds 14 days to normal east-to-west container ship voyages and 18 days for slower bulk carriers and tankers, eventually results in higher costs. The surge in costs has diminished the price advantage traditionally associated with sea freight. Currently, rail freight from China's Chongqing municipality to Europe is about 30% cheaper than sea freight. As a matter of fact, over a decade of development, the full process costs of China-Europe freight trains have decreased by over 30%. Amidst the Red Sea crisis, an analysis by Foreign Policy magazine in late January called China ahead of the curve. That's Foreign Policy magazine. And the Belt and Road Initiative, a blueprint for what every nation needs in an age of uncertainty and disruption. The solution to supply shocks is more supply chains, more belts, more roads, it wrote. I didn't read that far into the article, but based on my knowledge of China's Belt and Road Initiatives and what I view as the supply chain war, which I truly believe is an accurate description of what's going on in the world right now. We have physical war in Ukraine and Palestine and Israel and things like that, but the real war is the supply chain war. And these other physical wars that are popping up are effects of that, more or less. Politically, you can say the tensions as well, but as Russia moves towards China, the Luhansk and Donetsk regions, which are filled with Russian people, that's a massive manufacturing hub. The eastern part of Ukraine also has that giant nuclear power plant. And so we're looking at supply chains, Crimea supply chains, and so on and so forth. So the war is based on the supply chains. Gaza as well, massive amounts of natural resources recently discovered. The United States plans to build a humanitarian pier to deliver aid to the Palestinians, but maybe that pier, if Israel takes Gaza, will turn into a supply chain pier. Go get the gas and use that pier. It's there anyways. Build it up, build it out for infrastructure, for supply chain energy infrastructure and so on. So we're really looking at that. How much time do we have here? Am I going to do that? A couple of other things that we're just going to take a look at. Maybe not. I think that's going to be it for today. I think that's fine, actually. We'll be doing more supply chain wars and other aspects of the economy in the next episode of the Japan What podcast. So we're running up to an hour here, and I think that's fine. So tune in next time, because next time I'm going to go on and continue these ideas. We have how AI is helping reduce supply chain attacks, and as well as a focus about Taiwan, as well as potentially a manifestation of conflict for the supply chain wars. And that's very important as well. And what furthermore, the opposite effect of the Western G7 future supply chain is a vision of green energy and sails and ammonia and hydrogen. And we'll have these sail ships go through the earth, and they will subtract minerals and elements from the ocean using these separation techniques, and that will fuel our societies of the future. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia, China, Iran, they're all going natural resources. We're going to use energy to the max to deliver what we want to do for our future. And I'm not sure which one is the better goal, but the whole green cult thing that's infested into the Western society right now is tearing it apart, in my opinion. So we'll see where it goes. I wonder if it'll take a bunch of lemmings running off the edge of a cliff to destroy half of what they've built up before they realize that it's all been an insane Pied Piper fantasy scale level extinction event on their own making, that before they take it back towards something like, why don't we use some of these natural resources, but you use our engineering know-how to make them less pollutionary or something like that. Anyways, that's going to be the Japan What podcast for today. That's the war segment.
Die for the war. Everybody moves. Die for the good. For the good. Die for the war. Die for the war.
Remember, we're part of the podcasting 2.0 infrastructure. You can donate Bitcoin to the podcast via apps like the Podverse app or the Fountain app. There's plenty of them. Get rid of your legacy app and get on board podcasting 2.0. We also have the website, MatthewPMBigelow.com. Go there for all of the show notes, some photos, and more. Or you can donate via PayPal at paypal.me/JapanWUT. So you found it coming at you from the armpit of Asia in the Tomihisa Cho Studios in Shinjuku. This has been the Japan What Podcast, episode 141. Take it easy, everybody. Until next time, I bid thee a very heartful and warmful Ja Mata Ne.
You.